Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Labyrinths in the News for Monday, November 9th. I'm your host, Christiana, coming to you live from the Couve, that's Vancouver, Washington, across the river from Portland, Oregon, as I will be doing every Monday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. My lead-in music is the first cut off of Susan Alexander's CD, Sequentia, called Icos, which is short for icosahedron, the water symbol in sacred geometry. Sequentia is music using tones recorded from DNA vibrations. Susan recorded these tones in 1988 with the help of Dr. David Diemer, at that time a cell biologist at the Davis campus of the University of California. If any of you would want to chat while we're on the air, please go to Christiana-Anea at blogtalkradio.com. That's Christiana-Annea at blogtalkradio.com. Today, my guest is Eunice Schroeder, a fellow Couvian, director of Sacred Journey Ministries, a spiritual director at the Interfaith Spiritual Center in Portland, Oregon, and a key figure in the Pacific Northwest Labyrinth community. She is here with me today to talk about her labyrinth ministry and how her life has been impacted by this archetypal tool. Eunice, welcome to Labyrinths in the News. Welcome, Eunice.
Can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. This is always a fun thing to do, and hopefully will be informative and entertaining and for everybody out there who's either just gotten into labyrinths and walking labyrinths, and for those people who have been doing it a long time. So I would like to just start out by asking you about the event that you just completed. You had a three-day event that you were hosting or speaking at in Portland, Oregon. Did it involve labyrinths?
It sure did, absolutely. What we had was the 9th annual Labyrinth Society International Gathering. It was out at McMenamin's Edgefield, a really fabulous place. And we gathered together out there people from literally all over the world who are interested in labyrinths. People who build labyrinths, people who facilitate labyrinth work, like myself, and people who just love labyrinths. So we had a fabulous time. There were workshops. There were many labyrinths, of course, to walk, including outside. We had wonderful weather, so that helped. And some keynote speakers. We flew in from Scotland and Costa Rica. Just absolutely a fabulous gathering. And I'll just say for your listeners who aren't familiar with the Labyrinth Society, it is an international organization. It's headquartered here in the United States. But they have a fabulous website that's really fun to look at, and that's labyrinthsociety.org. So that would be of interest to your listeners, I'm sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they can go on there and it's like a multi-layered informational site, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. There's just tons of information. You could spend a lot of time there. But educational and fun at the same time, yeah.
Well, it seems that labyrinths call people to them, and I'm always amazed at how they rearrange people's lives once they're let in. What was your experience, and what action did you take to honor this kind of energy if this kind of thing happened to you?
That's a great question. I entered my first labyrinth about 12 or 13 years ago, and actually it was in a very dark time in my life, and I was feeling frustrated and depressed and literally like my life had kind of hit the wall. Things weren't working out the way I thought they would, and I really didn't know where to turn next. And a friend of mine said, well, you need to walk a labyrinth. And I remember my first reaction was, I don't think so. That just doesn't sound good. My life is already very confusing, thank you. And, of course, I was confused between what a labyrinth is and what something like a maze is. But as you and I know, the labyrinth is a single pathway to a center, and you don't have to worry about getting lost or stuck. So I did walk my first labyrinth at that time, and what I remember is crying buckets of tears. Something inside of me really released, let loose with that energy of the labyrinth. And I've been working with them, researching them, teaching people about them, doing labyrinth walks ever since. And for me, it was a very healing experience. And that's something that I want to share with other people. The fact that the labyrinth is a beautiful symbol, a metaphor for the journey of life, a metaphor for going to that place inside of you that is your core, that is your essence, and finding the sacred there. That's what happened for me. And so I just love being able to share that with other people and have them also experience that kind of healing.
Well, when you walked this labyrinth, mm-hmm. in terms of your professional life, because it seems to me, looking at what you have done and what you're doing now, that you have managed to weave all of these things together so amazingly well. So where were you when you first walked that labyrinth? Where were you? Did you already have your doctorate in ministry, where were you in that on that path? That point.
A lot has happened since I walked the labyrinth. At the time I walked the labyrinth the first time, I wasn't even working. I just had a BA degree, and I was very unclear about what I wanted to do with my life. So all of the graduate work that I've done, two master's degrees and a doctorate, all came after I walked the labyrinth. Now, I'm not going to give the labyrinth the complete credit for that, but it jump-started something inside of me where I wanted to go deeper. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to, as I tell people, marinate in spirituality. I mean, I just accessed something inside of me that seemed so real and so important and so vital that I hadn't had time to do before, that I was too busy, you know, just doing day-by-day survival things. So that's what kind of got me started back to school. And I got a couple of master's degrees, and I went to Merrillhurst University, which gladly accepted my request to let the labyrinth be my graduate research so that my thesis work, my writing, was all about the labyrinth. So, yes, all of that did come after I first entered the labyrinth.
Wow. And so what did you get your two master's degrees in?
Yeah, those are both at Merrillhurst University. One is in the master's in applied theology, very practical degree. And the other one, the Master of Arts in Interdisciplinary Studies in Spiritual Traditions. Both of those degrees, which are still being offered, are interfaith degrees, which is exactly what I wanted to do, and it's the work that I'm doing now, interfaith.
So you came out of that, and then you went directly into a doctorate, or how did this? Because I have here that you're director of Sacred Journey Ministries, and mm-hmm. a spiritual director at the Interfaith Spiritual Center. Oh, what was this? How did one thing lead to another? And in terms of this,
okay,
your path here?
Yeah, you know, things unfold. They evolve. You can't, it's looking back, it may seem like a step-by-step thing, but at the time you're kind of feeling your way. I'd never heard of spiritual direction in my life, never. And when I got to Merrillhurst, I met a gentleman who was a spiritual director, and I said, "What the heck is that? I'd never even heard of that." And he explained it to me, and I went, "Wow, what a great thing," because spiritual direction is sitting down with a spiritual mentor or companion who will guide you, who will listen to you, who will be present for you as you go through your life, including the whole spiritual aspects of it. And I found out there was training for that, a 3-year program in Portland. So I signed up for that shortly after I started my schooling, and I was able to use that work, that training, as a practicum for my master's degree. So it all kind of fit together nicely. And then when I graduated, I also had done the facilitator training to be a labyrinth facilitator through Veriditas in San Francisco with Dr. Lauren Artress. She trained me. And so I realized that I didn't want to just do one thing, that I wanted to have a diverse kind of ministry, a vocation, that I wanted to work with people one-on-one, which is what I'm doing with my spiritual direction work at the Interfaith Spiritual Center, and I wanted to do work with the Labyrinth. So I started Sacred Journey Ministries with that intent, to be kind of an umbrella organization that would support both my personal individual work with individuals and my work taking the Labyrinth. I have two Canvas portable Labyrinths that I take to hospitals, schools, retreat centers, rehab centers, whoever, churches, whoever invites me. So all of those are part of Sacred Journey Ministries, and all of those came out of, again, my decision to share the amazing healing that I had experienced.
And are you, with the Sacred Journey Ministries, are you it, or do you have other people in your organization that you work with together with, or...?
So far, it is just me. I have people who, of course, volunteer and help me along the way. I couldn't really do it completely by myself. And at the Interfaith Spiritual Center, I have 6 colleagues. We are a partnership. We all are spiritual directors, and we share space in North Portland. But yeah, Sacred Journey Ministries is me so far.
And okay, so... as it, in when you do your spiritual director work, and someone, I mean, this is, you said interfaith, so that means someone could come and they could be a Tibetan Buddhist, they could be a Hindu, they could be a Muslim.
Yep.
It doesn't
yep.
matter.
That's correct.
And yet you can, you because of your doctorates and your master's, you have enough background in their religion and their culture to be effective with them, you feel?
Absolutely. You know, we're all on a spiritual journey, and the religious part of it is actually secondary, in my opinion. It's like your religion, and a lot of people will tell you that, you know, their religion has changed over the years. They may have been born or raised in a certain tradition, but a lot of people have grown away from it, or even, I would say, outgrown that tradition. That's what a lot of my clients tell me. But, yeah, I am actually teaching world religions at both Portland Community College and Merrillhurst University, so I feel very comfortable talking to people of all different faith traditions, and including all different Christian denominations. But again, it's not about religion. This is about the spiritual journey, and each person is doing that, whether they realize it or not. Everybody's on a spiritual journey, and so that part of it I feel very comfortable talking to really anybody about, and I do have clients from all different religious traditions.
And so someone would come to the Interfaith Spiritual Center to talk to a spiritual director separate from going to see a psychologist or psychiatrist, or they have already been and they haven't gotten answers, and they know that there's something else that's not feeding them? Is that, Do you find that that's the case with a lot of the people who are your clients?
Yeah, I would say that. A lot of my clients say, you know, I've been to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, therapist, whatever, and it helped me, and it helped me along the way, but they are not comfortable, they say to me. I'm talking about the therapist now. The therapist is not necessarily comfortable talking to them about their spiritual life. You know, there's kind of a block there. I haven't talked to any therapists, but a lot of them feel that's beyond their realm, and their training is in a different area. So when people realize through their healing work that they're doing, and I totally support therapists and psychologists. I've been there myself. And I often refer my clients to people if I feel that I can't completely help them. So this is a very viable tradition that they're involved with. But sometimes they say, you know, I just can't go deeper with this person I'm working with, and I wanted somebody that could really help me with the spiritual side of my life. And that's a piece I'm very comfortable with.
Well, that's really fascinating because you don't hear much about spiritual directors or what they do.
That's true.
You know, Eunice, you sent me a list of your calendar events of what's happening, and you are a very busy woman. You're facilitating an open labyrinth walk at Merrill Hurst University, and then the next week you're going to be at the Grotto in Portland. Can you tell us a little bit? You're very familiar with Merrill Hurst. You teach there. What is their history? Weren't they originally a Catholic university?
They still are. They're grounded in Catholicism. They were founded by the Sisters of the Holy Names of Jesus and Mary, which, frankly, is a very liberal, progressive group of women. And so look out if you run into one of those sisters. They are fabulous. And they've always been about educating. They started out, came down from French Canada, and pioneer women, you know, that forded the rivers to get here. And they decided that the women out here in Oregon needed some education. And at that time in the 1800s, you know, not necessarily that was happening. Anyway, so they started Merrill Hurst. It was originally a women's college, so it was just for women. And then over the years, it has evolved and became co-ed, and it still has its Catholic roots, that's for sure. But it's a very spiritual place. Talk to anybody who's been a student there, and they will tell you the same thing. It's like being hibernating. It's like being in a cocoon. It's a safe place. It's very inclusive. It has a lot of that feminine energy that it started with, which is very comforting, and again, it has evolved as far as the religious studies department to be very interfaith, welcomes anybody. I have students who are Jewish and pagan and Wiccan, Buddhist, you name it. They feel safe there. They feel comfortable. So it's a wonderful place. I love Merrill Hurst.
And they have a long history and were instrumental in fostering interest in the labyrinths in the Pacific Northwest, weren't they?
That's true. Yeah. When I arrived at Merrill Hurst in 1998, there was already interest in the labyrinth then. And that was, I had just found out about the labyrinth, but they were already doing some labyrinth workshops and things. And so I just, you know, got into the flow and have been very involved with the idea of getting a permanent outdoor labyrinth at Merrill Hurst, which we're still working on, but we're getting closer. And after I finished my master's degrees there, the religious studies department invited me to teach about the labyrinth at Merrill Hurst. So I do have two classes that I teach, a one-day, one-credit class in the summer and a three-credit, two-weekend class in the winter. And more recently, just this past year, we were able to purchase a canvas labyrinth that belongs on the campus. In other words, the school owns the labyrinth, and so it stays right there on campus. And so any faculty or students can use it in their class. We'll be using it for the Harvesting Gratitude Open Labyrinth Walk Friday, November 13th, from 5 to 9 p.m., we'll be using the Campus Labyrinth.
How big is it?
It's about 24 feet. It's 7 circuits, for those who understand labyrinth technology. It's about 7 circuits. It's a beautiful labyrinth.
What is the design?
It is that hybrid design. It's a cross between the Chartres 11 circuit and the more ancient classic 7 circuit labyrinth. So it's 7 circuits, but it's got that wonderful Chartres overlay with the quadrants, kind of the compass points.
And who made that? Where did they get it from?
It was actually made by Lisa Moriarty of Minnesota, a wonderful woman who was at the International Labyrinth Gathering. She made it for us.
She's the current president, isn't it? Isn't she the current president?
I think she is the current president of the Labyrinth Society. Yeah.
Well, you're going to be also doing another workshop at the Grotto.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been there. Sounds wonderful.
Oh,
called
you need to go
Journey.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Journeying Towards Christ's Birth. Explain how you incorporate the labyrinth into religious themed walks.
Mm-hmm. The Grotto is this beautiful, beautiful place in Portland with lots of greenery, and it's actually part of the Catholic community in Portland, but it's a very sacred place and has been for a long time, and they are wanting to put in a permanent outdoor labyrinth. So they are holding some labyrinth workshops to help folks who aren't familiar with the labyrinth become more familiar, so that other people can get excited about helping support their plans for an outdoor labyrinth. So they asked me to come and do a workshop about during Advent, moving towards Christmas. And I love that theme because the labyrinth is like a bridge from the outer shell, shall we say, to the inner personal experience of spirituality. And moving towards Christmas, for me, is moving towards, again, the heart of who we are, the heart of our sacred self, or you could say a new birth, Christ's birth, but also a new birth within us. And plus, Advent is a time of waiting. Those of us who have grown up with Advent, it's the 4 weeks before Christmas, and when we were little, that was really hard to wait for Christmas. But at least we had Advent, and Advent was just the anticipation and the joy and the waiting. So walking a labyrinth is also about waiting because, you know, when you get to the entrance of the labyrinth, you think, oh, I think I'll just walk straight to the center, thank you very much. You know, why would you want to wander and wander and wander around the center before you finally get to it? Well, guess what? That's how life is. We rarely get to go straight to the center. So the labyrinth gives you this fabulous waiting time when you can experience what it feels like to not yet be where you're going to eventually be.
And it can be very uncomfortable for people.
Yeah, that's true.
And what kind of labyrinth are now, maybe I missed this, but what kind of a labyrinth is it that you're going to be walking there?
At the Grotto, it will be my 11 circuit labyrinth, the Chartres.
Canvas.
Yes, canvas. Uh-huh. It'll be inside, yeah, at their conference center there. And that's on Saturday, November 14. Let's see, that one is 9 to noon. And by the way, they really want people to register for that one by tomorrow, which is November 10. Yes. I'll give you a phone number real quick. If somebody's interested in going to that, we are looking for a few more people. It's 503-254-7371 if you'd like to be included in that workshop.
And what is the cost of the workshop?
That one is $30.
Okay, that's very reasonable.
Yeah.
Well, the name of it, Journeying Towards Christ's Birth. I mean, the whole idea of the journey. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the Mary and Joseph on the and heavy with child on the back of the donkey. I mean, it's a beautiful story. but the long journey towards Jerusalem, towards Bethlehem, and and that also it definitely is epitomized in the journey that you take inward in the, on the labyrinth, I think.
Exactly. It's a perfect metaphor.
Then you're also going to be speaking after that at the Women's Spirituality Conference in Vancouver, Washington, at the end of the November. And the topic is the labyrinth is a symbol of the sacred feminine.
Is this something
that you're, I think that this was a similar to what your workshop was at the TLS gathering. Can you talk a little bit about the topic?
Sure. Yes, it is. It's kind of my life's work, actually. I mean, this is the work that I did for my master's thesis. The Sacred Labyrinth, the Rebirth of the Feminine Divine, or as I said, or I call it for my class, the Sacred Labyrinth, Reconnecting with the Feminine Divine. You know, as I was getting to know the labyrinth, becoming friends with it, journeying on its pathways, I wasn't sure why it was so powerful. I wasn't sure why it was speaking to me so deeply and just infusing me with some kind, I mean, I couldn't even find language for it, but it felt like it was nourishing me, nurturing me, all that good sacred energy. And I didn't understand really what it was about. I wasn't fighting it, but I wanted to understand it. And as I continued reading more books about the labyrinth and its history, I really got it that there's a lot of sacred feminine energy inherent in the labyrinth. It's just part of the design of it. It's part of the history of it. It's part of the spirituality of it. And so that's what I love to share in my classes and my workshops, because we in the Western culture and the Western spiritual traditions, religious traditions, have really weighed heavily towards the masculine spirituality, which is a part of who we are. It's a balance of the two, but the patriarchal religions that most of us grew up with, not all, but most of us, really were heavily weighted towards the masculine, the rational, the linear, the way of looking at things, that things need to make sense. And it turns out so that's how I grew up. I mean, that was my family and my tradition. But it turns out that I had really missed out on the whole intuitive way of being spiritual, the whole intuitive way of living in a more spontaneous, more creative, more imaginative, more symbolic way of being, a way of being spiritual. That's what the labyrinth really brought out for me. So that's what gets my juices flowing, gets me really passionate. And as I share that with other people, many times they find it too and are grateful for that opening into another way of looking at things.
Well, now you talked about design and history. Do you go into that in detail in terms of where these labyrinths were found in antiquity and and for instance, and for many cultures, what this signified to them in terms of the feminine?
Yes, absolutely. There's all kinds of connections. It's a wonderful thread. You know, one of the Greek myths about the labyrinth is Ariadne's thread. And there really is a beautiful, sacred, feminine thread through a lot of this history. And, you know, we don't have time to get into it today, but yes, I do go into that, share it. And just one piece of that is the wonderful Gothic cathedral in France, in Chartres, France, is dedicated to Mary, And that's where this beautiful labyrinth comes from. So there's another powerful feminine piece out of religious tradition and also out of the spiritual legacy of the labyrinth.
That there's one thing that you talked about was, well, what you were saying was basically that it is truly an archetypal instrument, because it what you're saying is that it shows up in all cultures, in some form or another, reflecting this intuitive connection, this nurturing connection.
Right.
All different.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't aware of that, that it really is a universal symbol, that it is found all over the world. Because we didn't grow up with it at all, you know, in the United States, at least I didn't. It's really been only recently rediscovered, shall we say.
Well, you know, the Protestant religion certainly negated and pushed aside the feminine for sure. I mean, there's Mary there as the mother, and that's about it. There's a lot more Mary culture in the Catholicism, and it's that was the issue with Protestantism. That's why they broke off. One of the reasons they broke off from Catholicism. So
there's
all that in the past. You're a member of the Labyrinth Network Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Of Labyrinth Network, and that's an organization. In the Pacific Northwest, created to promote labyrinths and information about labyrinths and the use of labyrinths. And now, and LNN was the host for the TLS gathering and also hosted one of the pre-gathering workshops. Have you seen any response or a greater response since the TLS gathering with labyrinth inquiries, or any further interest or increase in interest?
Yes, that's what I hear from Kay Canavy, who runs our website, which is, by the way, www.labyrinthnetworknorthwest, all spelled out, .org. She said there is more interest, people checking in to see what's going on with labyrinths in our area. And if you go to that website, it's pretty amazing because there's a calendar there. There's almost every day of the month, there's something going on somewhere in the Northwest involving labyrinths. So this is really amazing. I mean, it didn't used to be this way. So there is a phenomenal growth in interest in this ancient spiritual practice.
Do you think it's because of the times we're living in right now? I mean, do you think there's even a greater need for this tool?
I do. I think it takes us to a place that we need to go, a contemplative, reflective place that, as I said before, is open to anyone. I mean, think about it. The labyrinth has no denominational, no religious affiliation whatsoever. It's really, truly universal. How many other symbols do we have, literally, in our world that anyone can feel like, oh, I know what this is, I can do this, without any sense of, oh, but that's, you know, not my tradition, or that's not my religion. It doesn't matter. It's about spirituality. It's about being human. It's about the journey of life. So, yes, we need symbols like this where we can come together as a people, as a community, and enjoy the feeling of being in this together. And let's face it, times are hard. With climate change and the economy and all the stuff going on today, people are anxious. People are anxious. And I find that the labyrinth slows me down, centers me, grounds me, whatever language you want to use for it. It's just a very calming and connecting kind of a thing.
Well, I'm checking my switchboard here, and we don't really have any callers, so I'm going to just continue this conversation.
Okay.
I would like to go back to talking a little bit about facilitating as a labyrinth facilitator. So you have these events and you're there with the people and you have 30 people or 25 people or 40 people walking.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly does a labyrinth facilitator do?
That's a good question. create safe space, create sacred space. You know, people often ask if they can rent my labyrinth, and I do that. If you know, obviously I charge people for that, but people can borrow my labyrinth and do their own labyrinth walks. But having said that, I was trained with Lauren Artress to watch for and be attentive to all of the things that can happen during a labyrinth walk, and to create this place, this space in which the labyrinth walk happens, where people will feel comfortable, where people can be real, where it's okay to cry, where they can come off the labyrinth and sit down and do some serious journaling or reflecting. And I am there. I'm with the labyrinth the whole time. And so if somebody needs to talk, which often they do, I can sit down with them. And, of course, I am a spiritual director, so I'm very comfortable with people pouring their hearts out. That's what I do for a living, is listen. And so it really is helpful to have somebody there who can support folks for whom a labyrinth walk is an opening, is a way of going deeper. And sometimes people are a little surprised by the tears, by the memories that come up, experiences that they remember as they're walking the labyrinth. And so they really need to do some processing. So labyrinth facilitator, if they're professionally trained like myself, they really are prepared to help people do that.
And have you had experiences where there was a fine line between them holding themselves together and not after walking a labyrinth?
You know, as Lauren Artress says, and I really admire her, she said, you can trust the labyrinth. In other words, the labyrinth isn't going to hurt anybody. The labyrinth isn't going to put somebody like over the edge, shall we say. It doesn't do that. Now, it can upset people. It can trouble them. But, for example, I had a gal walking the labyrinth, and she got lost. In other words, she accidentally was kind of, you could say, spit back out again. She thought she was going towards the center, and she ended up coming back out. And I was standing right there, and she burst into tears. And so I pulled her over a little bit to the side, and I said, you know, what's happening? And she said, my husband just died, you know, a month ago or whatever it was. And, I mean, she was grieving. And so it felt like the labyrinth, you know, had spit her back out. And it just felt awful for her, kind of like the end of her road, you know. It's not going to work. There is no future, or however you want to say that. And so for her, it was a horrible metaphor. And so I just said, do you want to try again? Do you want to go back in? And she said, and, you know, through her tears, she said, yes, I do. And I said, okay. And so she started over again. And, of course, that time she was fine. And she made it to the center and came back out. And so it was emotional, but it was also healing. And so it's just a matter of working with people to find what they need and supporting them.
And do you use props when you're doing these labyrinth workshops? Do you use music?
Yeah, sure. People enjoy some quiet music in the background. I've only had one person in my whole 12 years or whatever it's been that I've been working with labyrinths who said, I would have preferred it being quiet. Everybody else says to me, I love the music. It helps to take you to that deeper place. So it's been fun over the years finding music that really helps people to go deeper. And I love to use candles if they're allowed to just darken the room a little bit, not obviously pitch dark, but, you know, a little bit. Maybe have some candles, or now I'm starting to use tube lights, Christmas tube lights, around the perimeter of the labyrinth, which makes it look like little tiny votive candles. A lot of places don't want to use real candles anymore for fire danger, so this is a way of not having actual candles. But the idea of little lights is very sacred. I mean, think about it. We've had candles marking sacred space for thousands of years. So, yeah, so things like that can make it even more sacred.
Well, we're out of time, Eunice, and I just want to thank you so much for joining me today.
And I want to make sure they get my website, which is sacredjourneyministries.com.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Well, it's my intention to enlighten Labyrinth neophytes and support Labyrinth veterans with guests like you, who provide a depth of information and personal experience, you know, not available through other sources. I don't care how many books you read. It's not the same as listening to somebody who's been there and been through it. So I thank you again so much, and many, many blessings on your path.
Thanks, Christiana. You're doing good work.
Well, namaste.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Labyrinths in the News in the Life category on blogtalkradio.com with your host, Christiana Anea. Please join me next Monday when my guest will be the prolific labyrinth designer, builder, and speaker, Robert Foray, an authentic Johnny Appleseed of labyrinths, instrumental in spread of labyrinths and labyrinth information around the world. So stay tuned for an exciting session. Have a blessed week in Lakesh.